You're listening to one of our favorite outdoor explorers here on KSKA Anchorage. It has been edited to be replayed here today.
It's Outdoor Explorer. I'm Charles Wolforth. Outdoor skating is the classic northern sport. Just picture a family skating on a pond in the golden light of an Alaskan afternoon. I particularly enjoy the spontaneous way we skate in Anchorage in a lot of communities around Alaska. Just grab your skates and head for the pond, where you're sure to meet friends around the burn barrel. On today's show, we're talking about community skating. Not the hardcore hockey or figure skating, which mostly happens indoors, but the fun skating, pickup hockey, kids skating lessons, open ice, and even skating distances in the backcountry. It's something folks do all over Alaska, and you could say it's a basic Alaskan skill. And I've got two hardcore Alaskans in the studio with me right now. We just established that having come to Alaska at age three, I'm the chechako in the room. These two guys were both born and raised here, and they're both skating fanatics, which I guess goes along with our theme. Jim Renkert is with the Alaska Speed Skating Club, Anchorage Skates. Jim, thanks for being with us.
Well, good to be here, Charles.
And Edwin Blair, Anchorage Skate Club and Alpine Services. He ices a lot of outdoor ice around Anchorage. Thanks for being with us, Edwin.
Yeah, it's my pleasure, Charles. Thanks.
So, Edwin, I know we've known each other a very long time. I don't know exactly how long, but you've been into skating probably since you can remember.
Yeah, I think my first memories of skating when I was just starting out were special memories down in the Westchester Lagoon area before the watershed had been set and before it had become the great skating area it is now, before the lagoon was made officially. And there were ponds that were sort of backwater to the estuary that existed west of Minnesota Bypass. And the area was pretty wild in those days. And there were little ponds that had cattails growing through them. And we'd hunt frogs there in the summertime and so forth. But I remember my first skating experiences being trickling around through those little ponds in much the same way as you see people getting the first ice down at Potter Marsh.
Yeah, I was going to say Potter Marsh is sort of this special spot we've got now where the water is so thin that you can skate there really early. And you can kind of explore your way through those weeds and through the bushes and everything else. Yeah.
Yeah. For me, that sort of typifies sort of the roots of outdoor skating, as you kind of envision things happening on the ponds and fjords of Norway or wherever we got the idea of standing on metal blades.
Yeah. Yeah. So, Jim, tell me about your early skating. When did you learn to skate?
Well,
do you remember?
I can remember the very first time I did skate. It was at Inlet View Elementary School, and I must have been in first or second grade. Can't quite remember which grade, but I do remember the first time, and it was under the lights in the evening. My mom took me down and a number of other people out there, and you know, I took a few spills during the evening, but it didn't take too long before I got the general hang of it. But then, like Edwin, I also skated down at the area was Westchester Lagoon before it was Westchester Lagoon, and I can remember all three of us in elementary school skated out. And there was actually kind of a little treed island that looked down onto Chester Creek. And we were careful not to venture too close because we would have slid right into the creek.
Right.
And
yeah.
That would not have been good.
We had different safety standards in those days, didn't we? It was like things were done a little bit differently.
Oh, yeah. Just that folks just turned you loose.
Yeah, right. Well, it seems like learning to skate has got to be about all that that fun and the relaxation. And it's probably going to involve a parent who is holding your hand or letting you push a chair around and then trying to get away from you and get you to be on your own in a little while. I know I've taught four kids to skate, and it's can be challenging, but it's fun, and it's really fun to watch them once they get it.
Yeah, I think, you know, the early proving grounds for the experience are certainly outside for most people. You know, the control environment of the arenas is there for us and an easy way to sign up and guarantee the ice time. But I think the adventure for a youngster learning to skate for the first time outside in fresh air is a wonderful first experience, and it gets a love in the activity.
Yeah.
Well, it certainly helps to have parents who get kids on skates, but Edwin and I both went to Inlet View Elementary School, and you know, there were parents involved, but mm-hmm. It was really the school that really got the kids together. The principal of the school and a few key teachers made sure there were skates available for kids, and they made sure there was ice maintained at the rinks, along with a few of the local families. Mm-hmm. As it turns out, I didn't realize this at the time growing up, but Ted Stevens and Catherine Stevens were, I'm sorry, Ted and Ann Stevens were instrumental in those early days of maintaining those rinks, along with some of the other families, the moms and dads in the area. Ann Stevens held these things called chuck wagon dinners, which I remember going to, but I didn't know what they were for until Edwin filled me in just a few years ago.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it seems like, Anchorage went through a phase where we were kind of a small town and people kind of maybe banded together and iced a few rinks or cleared off a few ponds and taught, they had sort of group skating. And then we kind of went through a period when there wasn't that much skating going on and the lagoon was not cleared and we didn't have that much outdoor ice. But now we've got a lot of outdoor ice. I think it was Mayor Maestrom was in office when the lagoons first started to be iced and Cheney Lake and some of the other areas. And those are huge community gathering places now.
Well, it was Mayor Maestrom who did that down at Westchester Lagoon. There was a little patch down there for skating, but he had the Parks Department expanded, he said, and put in some trails and then put those burn barrels in. There was some resistance to that at first, but then he said, yeah, put those in. And, of course, that's just been a wonderful addition for outdoor skating and really for the whole town. It's just great scene down there.
Yeah, and I know the district stopped icing a lot of rinks, but Edwin, you're able to ice a lot of rinks at elementary schools thanks to the PTAs, right?
Yeah, PTAs and other community groups, and Parks does a lot of maintenance, and the school district themselves still maintain a lot of ice in the district for skating.
Yeah, so how many are you doing?
Oh, I'm up over 20 rinks in Anchorage that we maintain. And actually, it's sort of almost a renaissance project in the way of restoring the activity at the elementary schools. What happened was as Anchorage developed and acquired more indoor facilities, there was less reliance on the outdoor facilities at the school district for hockey. And a lot of hockey, which had originally been scheduled games and practices on the outdoor facilities in Anchorage went away because the indoor facilities, made for a more comfortable and more reliable environment. And so that's the sort of the time that you're talking about when people moved off those rinks and they became a little more fallow. And because there was less utility of them, the school district moved away from doing elementary schools completely. Whereas when Jim and I grew up, elementary schools were maintained quite religiously. And yeah, there were active programs at the elementary schools and junior highs. School hockey was a program that existed even in elementary school, and that's where I started playing hockey before I played any league hockey. And then league hockey emerged, you'd sort of get a taste for it at your elementary school level, and then you'd get in a program like with the Anchorage Hockey Association and things, because it was a smaller town, was a little more sort of almost socialistic in the way of the program, where it was just sort of east side teams and west side teams and north side, and it wasn't broken apart among so many leagues. But there was sort of more of a holistic contribution, mm-hmm. a lot more reliance on being outside on the rinks. And weekends would see the local rink at Inlet View and the rink at Tanthony Delaney Park, which is filled, with people all weekend long, because there really wasn't the indoor facility to suck up the demand. And what's happened since then is, like I've said, is the leagues have grown into the
building. More formal, yeah. Well, I mean, we produced a Scotty Gomez out of that, so that seems to be working. But competitive hockey is such a commitment. It's such a heavy thing for a family to get into in terms of just the time, let alone the money and concentration on that activity. It's great, and we obviously produce some of the best hockey players in the world here, but for everybody else, now there's also this outdoor activity that's going on. And you've been working on kind of trying to bring back some of the kid casual skating, right?
Yeah, I think, like you say, Charles, I think the commitment that a hockey program requires in Anchorage nowadays, especially, well, one based indoors, of which all of them are, does require a large time commitment, especially when a season starts in late September and goes into March, every weekend just about inside the buildings playing hockey, and the financial requirement that it takes to sharpen skates and equip your kids and let, and this is, we're not even talking,
gear,
we're not even talking highly competitive programs, but really more of a recreational program will really consume a lot of time and energy of a parent who has one, two kids in the program is totally consuming. And beyond that, you can sort of ignore any other outdoor activities in the winter. If you want to go to the lake or go snow machining or go skiing or things like that, it gets kind of consuming. And I've always felt in my, you know, in myself that there's a lot of people who could afford, you know, all of the ice hockey or upgraded programs they'd like, but simply stay away from it sort of for fear of losing the other opportunities for activity. And there's a lot of kids that probably don't get introduced to skating just because there's sort of this fear that, you know, they'll sort of get sucked into the vortex of mm-hmm. what ends up channeling into a $10,000 a year commitment.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's sort of an overblown paranoia about, you know, being in a hockey program or being in a high-class figure skating program. But, you know, people like to talk big numbers sometimes.
Tell us about what you're doing with your group.
Well, sort of on behalf of I feel... on behalf of a lack of opportunity to actually enjoy it in sort of an a la carte or a piecemeal way or just a sampling of what it is to learn to skate and to be taught how to skate by a little more skilled person or have the opportunity to put your kids in a program that is short-term based and doesn't require so much commitment, something modeled a little after Junior Nordic where you can sign up for short bracket mm-hmm. programs and at different levels, and all of it, the emphasis being on the fun of the game and the skating, you know, as an activity and not so much a competitive event or having to become the best mm-hmm. at it, but just to go out and really play on the ice. And that's my emphasis. I've been working at Inlet View. Here we go again, back to Inlet View for the last 3 years, nurturing my startup, or it's not mine. It's, you know, it's a nonprofit, mm-hmm. but it's a startup that, you know, came to be under some of the teaching that I did a few years ago there. And so we have an after-school program that's emerged, and now we have it at two schools. And we're into a nonprofit status now, and it's really a resource too. But the objective is to get kids and introduce a program in the elementary school level or an opportunity at the elementary school level for kids to sign up for an after-school program where they can learn to skate and have
fun. Yeah.
And have it be 2 or 3 weeks long mm-hmm. and just get a sample and just have some fun.
Sort of like we're talking about when we were kids, yeah.
Yeah.
The relaxed. So folks, I think your group is called Anchorage Skate Club.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we've got a link to it on our website at alaskapublic.org. Just scroll down to where you see community skating, click, and you'll see links to several opportunities to get involved in skating, outdoor skating, casual skating, not necessarily the stuff you see on TV, but the stuff that's just fun to go out and do. It's Outdoor Explorer. I'm Charles Wolforth. We're talking about community skating today, and you're just hearing from Edwin Blair, who is sort of the founder of the Anchorage Skate Club, and also owns Alpine Services, which is the outfit that ices a lot of the outdoor ice around Anchorage on behalf of PTAs and groups that are interested in having some ice. And Jim Rinkert, he's involved in Anchorage Skates and also the Alaska Speed Skating Club. And you guys have developed a facility which is pretty rare in the entire United States of America. They're in Cuddy Park. Tell people about the speed skating oval. I think we could still call it the new speed skating oval, although it's been there a few years now.
Well, we're actually now into our sixth year, only our second year with lights. But yes, we have one of only six speed skating, regulation speed skating ovals in the United States.
That's amazing.
One, yeah, it is, especially when you consider that out of all the Winter Olympic sports, the United States has been the most successful by far in speed skating. You know, such legendary names like Bonnie Blair and Eric Heiden, Shawnee Davis, It's goes a very long, rich history,
yeah.
And there are only six of these facilities in the country. But I want to emphasize that the facility is not really a competitive facility. We use it for that, but it's really more of a recreational facility. Everybody's welcome to come out and use it on
there's
any
no
type
fee
of skate.
To show up and jump on it.
There's no fees. It's right there in the park. You can use your figure skates. You can use your hockey skates. It's great, great. We sometimes call it a recreation and fitness oval.
All right. And what's the how long is the oval?
It's what is known as a regulation 400 meter oval. To actually do 400 meters, you have to kind of do a crossover during a competition. So the inner circumference is actually like 357 meters, but 400 meter oval. Yeah. Close enough.
And it's are most of these outdoor, or is it pretty unique being outdoors?
Speed skating traditionally was always done outdoors. It wasn't until the 1988 Olympics at Calgary that they held the first indoor speed skating competition. Since then, almost all the Olympics are now, Olympic speed skating is now held indoors. In North America, there are indoor facilities in Salt Lake City, Calgary, and Milwaukee. Uh-huh. The rest of them, Lake Placid, there's one outside of Minneapolis in Bozeman, Montana. They're all outside.
I see. And it's Cuddy Park there, right in the middle of Midtown. And how do you pay for it?
The ice maintenance is approximately $16,000 a year, and Edwin has a contract with the city. But the Anchorage Skates, our group, whose mission was to build a facility, and our mission, now that we've built it, our new mission is to finish it. There's a few amenities we want to put in, but every year we go out and we sell through the Speed Skating Club and through our own use. And I've got one here for you, Charles, an ice pin. We borrowed the idea from the Nordic Ski Club, who sells trail pins every year. So we have these ice pins we sell. But you know,
it's voluntary.
It's a voluntary thing, but we also approach local businesses and individuals and ask them to contribute. So we raise $10,000 a year, and we then present that to the assembly every year to help defer maintenance costs.
Cool. Say, we've got another guest that I want to welcome to the show for a few minutes. Land Cole is with us from Denali National Park. His family has the 229 Parks restaurant, which is a great place to stop. I don't think they're open in the winter, but Land is involved in pond hockey up, and they've got a pond hockey game which has been going on for a very long time. Thanks for being with us, Land.
Yeah, pleasure to be here.
So tell us what happens on Sundays up there.
Well, I think we were discussing it the other day. We've been doing this since about 1992. And we get a group of people out together on Dinicky Lakes and just play some good old-fashioned pond hockey. And it's some pretty rustic roots, of course, with people skating around with milk jugs taped to their knees. And we've all kind of graduated up to full gear, as it's a lot easier to get up when you've fallen down.
Uh-huh.
But, yeah, we have a good old time, you know, spend some time shoveling snow and then patching cracks. That's a big part of it. Of course, it gets pretty cold up in our neck of the woods, so the cracks in the lake get pretty big. And we're trying to get people to get involved with our Adopt a Crack program, where it's just kind of like the highway, you know. People have their own crack that they get to take care of and patch. But, yeah, it's a lot of fun. Sunday afternoon.
There's no Zamboni out there on Dinicky Lake, I take it.
No, just jugs of water from the local spring, you know.
Uh-huh. So how do you, I mean, do you guys take a mop out there to smooth it out, or just count on the weather to take care of it for you?
You know, Mother Nature is generally pretty kind to us, so when we get our Chinooks, it'll blow the snow free, and then it starts smoothing out the ice on its own. So that's about all we can really rely on. We tried to, I don't know if you ever heard of the Alaska Ice Dragon, which is developed up in Fairbanks. It's kind of a propane fire deal. We tried that, but our rink's a little bit large for it. It's a pretty slow process, so
uh-huh.
Let Mother Nature take care of it. It's a little cheaper, too.
So Sunday, everybody just shows up, and it's right on the side of the highway. Just pull off, and everybody brings their stick and their gear, and you just start pick up a game?
Pretty much, yeah. And we throw the sticks in the middle, and we've gotten to the point where having jerseys is kind of nice, so you can kind of tell who's who. And we got kind of all ages and all abilities out there. My son just started playing hockey up in Healy about 3 years ago, and he's and his friends are getting to the level where they play with us now too.
You have to make sure you don't run over and kill the little guys.
Well, they're starting to get big enough where they're outrunning us. So.
All right, yeah. Yeah, got to teach them not to run over and kill the big guy, the old guys, huh?
Yeah.
So how many folks come out for this?
On a light day at the end of the season, there might just be two of us chasing each other around on the rotted ice. But when it's really good, we'll have maybe 20 people show up, and in the springtime, it's a lot of fun. Wear your sunglasses while you're ice skating.
Yeah, so you just have to, I assume it's probably not that organized in terms of what positions people are playing, and although if you've been doing it for a while, maybe you get more formal about it, huh?
No, it's pretty free-form, and our rink is about maybe two-thirds the size of a normal hockey rink, and of course we don't have any lines or anything. We do use 4x4s, and we line the perimeter of the rink with those, and then we built some goals out of an old water barrel. So it's informal, and people kind of skate all over, and when you need to take a break, you sit back and play some defense or sit in front of the goal a little bit. And
uh-huh. You got it. So the four by fours or the four-wheelers are giving you light from the headlights, or?
Oh, no, 4x4 boards.
Oh, I got you.
Givers, yeah.
Okay.
So it just keeps the puck from disappearing quite so far under the snow.
I got you. Okay. Oh, 4x4 boards. I got you. Wow, it really sounds like a lot of fun. It's a kind of a neat community up there. There's not too many people around, and I suppose you probably know almost all of them.
Yeah, and the people who aren't playing ice hockey are usually out skiing or mushing dogs or something. So, and there's a lot of trails that go by the rink, so you wind up seeing quite a few people on a Sunday afternoon.
Yeah, not too many couch potatoes live in Denali National Park, I imagine.
No, not a whole lot.
All right. Well, thanks a lot for telling us about it, Land Cole. He's got the 229 Parks restaurant, and telling us about pond hockey at Denali National Park at Deniki Lakes. Thanks for being with us, Land.
Indeed. Pleasure to be here.
All right. So it's Outdoor Explorer. I'm Charles Wolforth, and our topic today is casual skating, outdoor skating, just the kind of skating primarily that's just for fun. And it's, gosh, there's a lot of people doing it around town and around Alaska. It's kind of, to me, it feels like it's blossomed and gotten to be much more in the last 5 or 10 years. Would you agree, Jim?
Oh, yeah. It's really fun. A lot of people are taking up what we call, sometimes call adventure skating or backcountry skating. And it was back, I think, in the winter of 95, 96. We didn't have any snow for a long time, but we had cold weather. So a lot of, if you're a skier, which, that's my main sport, but I also grew up ice skating, but like a lot of my skier friends were unhappy. A bunch of us were going, hey, let's go ice skate. So we started just exploring. We'd go up to went up to the Nancy Lake canoe system and skated that. We found some lakes down on the Kenai Peninsula that were just awesome skating and beautiful. So ever since then, whenever the conditions are right, we're looking for great places to go ice skate. And that's kind of one of the interesting parts about it is you never know when you're going to get the conditions.
Yeah.
So you have to seize them when you get them.
Yeah. And we're going to come up to a break here in a little while, but in the second half, I want to talk a lot more about the cross country skating, the amazing trip you made to Holland. It's been a while now, almost 20 years ago, right?
Well, no, 1997. Not quite
15
20.
Years ago.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And all that. But one thing, when I was talking to Cole setting up the interview, he was saying that, well, we only play down to 20 below, That's pretty hardy. I've noticed that skating is very different when it gets real cold. Edwin, you know a lot about ice. It seems like when it gets really cold, your blades don't really cut the ice the way they do when it's a little bit warmer.
Oh, yeah, certainly. The mechanics of how an ice skate glides along is all about the heat differential between the temperature of the blade and the temperature of the ice. What really happens, we see when the temperatures get bitter cold, is there's a huge evaporative value for moisture. It gets very dry, as we know, when it gets colder. And then the layer of water that your ice, you know, your skating blade glides along becomes much more reduced, and you can actually hear your blades kind of start squeaking a little bit.
Uh-huh.
And it gets pretty tacky, and yeah, you're right, and your blades don't enter the ice surface nearly as much, and it's the skating becomes more different and a little more challenged in colder conditions, and like up at Denali Park, they noticed, and we notice it here too, when the temperatures dip, the evaporative factor in the atmosphere pulls a lot of moisture out of the rink itself, and you get huge fractures in the ice. And it's while it's common there, it's very common here too. The outdoor ice sheet tends to shrink and pull itself apart, mm-hmm, in sort of, mm-hmm, a plate tectonic kind of way, and you get these
big
huge cracks.
Yeah.
And I really like the idea of having an adopt-a-crack program.
Yeah.
think that's pretty novel.
So for you, I mean, since you're handling outdoor ice all the time, you just must have a lot of headaches like that to deal with.
Well, yeah, you end up being pretty reactive to the different conditions that present. Obviously, outdoor ice is very susceptible to all the elements, but you know, a lifetime of working on it and kind of coming up with different procedures for different conditions, you know, is you'd be surprised. You know, you can skate at 10, 15, 20 below. I know they do it up north quite a bit. I've done it a lot myself, mm-hmm, but it's much more comfortable closer to 30. and the actually, until springtime sun comes, even temperatures into the plus 30s, 35, air-wise, isn't enough to compromise the sheet. You can still go out and get your ice in 35-degree weather and you know, take your, you know, get down to your T-shirt and sunglasses,
yeah,
and still have a strong sheet.
That gets really nice, yeah. All right, it's Outdoor Explorer. We're talking about community skating today, and my guests in the studio are Edwin Blair, you just heard from, and Jim Rinkert. Edwin has Alpine Services. He ices a lot of the rinks around town, and also the Anchorage Skate Club, teaching young people to skate, and Jim Rinkert with Alaska Speed Skating Club and the oval that's in Midtown, and also has done some backcountry skating. I want to talk a lot more about backcountry skating and the different ways to skate around Alaska in the second half, and a lot of other topics to touch on. We're going to be talking to a friend from Haines and the amazing backcountry skating they have down there. We've covered some of the kid stuff and some of the fun stuff about skating and some of the learning that's happening and some of the groups that are out there. Hope you'll stick with us for the second half.
You're listening to Outdoor Explorer on Alaska Public Media. Find the show anytime as a free podcast in the iTunes store or connect with us online at alaskapublic.org.
We're going to head quickly down to Juneau, where K2's John Ryan recorded some residents out on Twin Lakes skating and playing hockey. This piece was recorded a few years ago after they'd had a cold front come through that gave them some great ice.
My name's Tom Paul. We're at Twin Lakes at the wharf. I'm just getting my skates on and looking forward to an hour or so of fun on the ice. Seems like you could just go on forever without much effort, and I particularly like skating outdoors. You can go a long ways in one direction. Here at Twin Lakes, what is it, a half a mile or so, maybe a mile, and then and all, you can go for a couple miles if you get the right conditions. You don't skate every year because you don't often get a frozen lake that's snow-free, and maybe two or three times a year, and you got to grab the window when you can.
This is Peter Ord, and we're at Twin Lakes playing a little pond hockey with a bunch of pond hockey addicts. And any day that there's ice, there's always a group of guys at noon A lot of people take off work for a little while. It's our source of vitamin D, I guess. Vitamin H, vitamin hockey. This cold snap, they started up Saturday. And so it's been 4 days, 5 days. This is a rare stretch. If we can get 7 days straight, that's rare. And then it might disappear for a month or two or a week, and then maybe we'll get it back again. We mix up our locations between Twin Lakes, Pioneer's Home. We're out of Skater's Cabin, depending where the ice is the best.
And how do you like playing outside compared to playing at a rink?
Oh, this is by far my favorite source of hockey. Although I play at the rink, but this beats it all.
We're back. It's Outdoor Explorer, and I'm Charles Woolforth. We're talking about community skating today. And in the studio, I have two guests, Edwin Blair with the Anchorage Skate Club and Alpine Services. Thanks for being with us, Edwin.
Thanks, Charles.
And Jim Renkert, Anchorage Skates, Alaska Speed Skating Club. I think Jim's involved in just about everything in town. Thanks for being with us, Jim.
My pleasure.
And we are talking about community skating. Got nothing against the figure skaters and the hockey skaters. They produce some amazing athletes in Anchorage. But they're mostly indoors. We're talking about the outdoor stuff, which tends to be more casual. Grab your skates, get out on the rink, or get out on the lake, or on the marsh, or even out in the backcountry. And we started talking about that a little bit, Jim. I had a fantastic trip. It's only one of this kind that I've done. A few years ago when we had snow and the lakes were still open, and then we had cold weather, and so you had beautiful snowy landscape and bare ice. And with another family, we went up to the Nancy Lake system and skated cabin to cabin using the public use cabins. Little ones were riding on sleds, you know, bigger ones were pulling sleds. My son had his Nordic skates. He was zooming around. Just amazingly fun and amazingly special. And it sounds like you've done some of these trips. You have to wait for just the right year, right? You don't always get to do it.
Oh, no, you do not get to do it every year. You have to watch the weather, and sometimes if we have cold weather in the fall and no snow, you can do it. But sometimes we get those Chinooks in the middle of the year and a low snow year, and then or rain, and then it freezes up again. And then, so sometimes in the middle of the winter, you can get out. Or some of the bigger lakes, like Kenai Lake, I'd been wanting to skate that for years, and finally got out and skated that 3 years ago in January.
Oh, my gosh.
And that was phenomenal. And there were ice boats out there, and some of the people who lived down there actually, I think one guy said they got out like 40 times that year.
You could skate a huge distance on that lake.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. We didn't go the entire length, but you could have, and some people did. We got out and went from the east end down to Porcupine Island and back. Just an amazing skate. But I also want to mention, I tried to skate Kenai Lake years earlier in 97 and actually fell in.
And where was that?
This was in Kenai Lake. Mm-hmm. There was a skim of snow over a spot we didn't see, and my partner and I, and he went off just a little bit to the other side and missed it, but I suddenly found myself, you know, in the drink.
Wow, what did you do?
Well,
kind of like intense, scary shock.
Well, didn't have time. You didn't have time to get scared. What I did was I did what you're supposed to do. I broke off the ice in front of me with my arms, and I didn't go over my head. And then I just quickly hauled myself out. But this is one of the things, we tell people, if you go backcountry skating, make sure you take some safety gear. And one of the most important things you can take is a pair of ice picks that you can hang over your neck on a
because you're not
gonna, line.
Your hands are not going to be able to grip the ice.
No.
So you need something to grip to pull out.
Yep.
What about I would think skates are heavy. You're wearing heavy winter gear. You didn't let it start to sink?
No. No, I had a pack on, and I think that helped keep me a bit buoyant. But
So what did you do once you got out? Did you have warm clothes you could hop into?
I had some warm clothes, but fortunately, it was also a warm day, and we hadn't gotten too far from the car at that point. But another friend did go through last year at Eklutna Lake, near the outlet, and it was very cold. Fortunately, we were again close to the car, so great activity, but it's like backcountry skiing where you need to take your beacon, probe, and shovel. You also need to take some safety gear. And, of course, your most important piece of gear is your brain being aware
right.
of the conditions out
well,
there.
Well, I mean, you're very experienced at this, but how does somebody who wants to give it a try know when it's safe to go, when it's not safe to go? What are the indicators? I mean, you know, I know in town, the Muni tells you don't skate on the lagoon. It's not thick enough. But if you're out on Kenai Lake or up in the Nancy Lake system, yeah, it's sort of more your personal judgment.
Well, the Forest Service has a blog site where they report conditions, both trail conditions and ice conditions. They had one day, they were reporting ice conditions earlier this year, U.S. Forest Service.
We'll get that on our website at alaskapublic.org.
Yeah, that's a good idea. And then, you know, check around, ask other people out there, you know. That's one of the things that's wonderful about the internet these days. But if you're going out there yourself, take a drill and drill along the edges and see how thick the ice is.
How thick do you need it to be? Edwin, you can jump in on that if you want.
Well, the standard that, you know, we use for equipment in the maintenance world is right around 12 inches. Now, for casual skating, for the enough strength to hold up a skater, I think it's about 4 to 5 inches to be safe.
But you also always need to be aware of, you know, lakes have springs in them and inlets and outlets, so you need to be aware.
Yeah, and you know, even when the weather's cold and the ice is thick, just this fall, skating on Potter Marsh, ice was excellent, and you could see it was frozen all the way to the bottom in a lot of places. But then when you get near to the bluff there was overflow or even open water, just caused by the fact that there's warm water that's coming into the marsh, and it's taking a while for it to freeze. So you have to kind of be scanning ahead of you to make sure that you're not getting near to that kind of thing.
Exactly. It's Alaska, and we always have to be aware that there are some inherent risks out there, and there's changes.
Mm-hmm. Now, Jim, you did this amazing thing in Holland. It was written up in the Anchorage Daily News, and I remember that article. And tell us a little bit about that. This is sort of a unique thing that happens very rarely.
Well, this is kind of convergence of all the good luck in my life happened in January 4th, 1997. But give you a little background. In 1985, I read a story in Outside Magazine about an American who went over to try to skate this event in Holland called the Elfstedentocht, the 11 Cities Tours. It's this 200-kilometer event they have on canals in Holland. But it's only happened 15 times in history.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, because you have to have – it has to be cold enough, long enough for the canals to freeze up to do this 200-kilometer. They have skating on the canals just about every year but in Holland, but not – it has to really be cold to be able to do this event. So anyway, I always thought I wanted to go do that, and then it hadn't happened from 1986. And then 1987, I got a call at Christmas time everything's frozen up in Holland. The weather forecast is good for the next 2 weeks. If you want to come skate the canals, you better do it now. So I hopped a plane and met some folks over there. And just by a bunch of incredible circumstances, I got into this race called the 11 Cities Tour. And it was with 16,000 other Dutchmen. I was one of only four Americans in it. And
you're like skating down a canal between windmills and farmhouses and the whole thing.
Windmills, farmhouses, these bridges and water gates. It's just the classic Dutch countryside that you thought existed in
and Christian Andersen thing.
Hans Brinker. So it was absolutely the best day of skating I've ever had and will ever have, probably.
How many miles was the race?
Well, it's 200 kilometers, so that's
140-something
miles, right, yeah.
But you don't do that all in one day.
Oh, yeah, that was one day. You have to do it in one day. They actually have a cutoff. If you don't make one of the last checkpoints, the 10th town, by a certain time. They cut it off and they won't let you skate anymore.
Oh, that is intense.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nothing like that here. It would be fun, but and it sounds like an Alaskan would want to do it, but nothing like that here. So have they ever been able to do that since, or has it gotten too warm?
They have not been able to do it since. 2 years ago, they almost were able to do it. I was just about ready to jump on a flight again and go back over, but they had one section of the course that just didn't freeze up quite enough. They didn't want to put people on it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So let's talk about skates. Really, you don't have to spend a huge amount of money if you're just a casual skater. You can get a reasonable pair of hockey skates that will fit and will feel okay for under $100, in my opinion. I mean, it could be used, or it could be a pair of plastic skates. Obviously, you can pay a huge amount of money for hockey skates. What do you guys use? Edwin?
Being a hockey player, I use hockey skates, and yeah, you're absolutely right. You can spend upwards $600-$700 for, you know, the top of the line professional style skates, but there's no reason for that. Especially with young kids, because they grow out of them so fast. You can go to the local Play It Again Sports or mm-hmm. Champions Choice, and you'll find that the younger kids' skates are always in perfect condition or practically
right,
out of the
box
condition because
they
move through them so quickly. And I really recommend that for $15-$25. You can, you know, tool up your kid every year with, you know, a new fitted size of skates and trade them back the next year. And that's really a great way to do it. I myself, I buy a year or two old skates when I get skates because I just, you know, it's pretty cost prohibitive to get the top of the line.
Yeah. And I've found, you know, nowadays they're selling skates for kids that have buckles and have easier to get on. I found having taught a lot of kids to skate and at school and with my own kids is that sitting at the edge of the pond in the cold, trying to get the skates tight enough with the laces can take a lot of the pleasure out of it, you know, especially for me, but also for the kid. They're getting impatient. They're getting cold. Once they're on their skates, they're happy. But that sort of getting the skates laced is a big deal. And so those buckle skates, they may not be the great thing you'd want for a hockey game, but they're pretty nice for just getting the kid going.
Well, that lacing—that's that's actually a limiting factor for a lot of teachers who want to get their classes involved
right.
in skating. It's a lot of actually a lot of work. So, yeah.
It took that optional where my kids went and our PTA paid Edwin to ice the rink. We would just make sure we had two parent volunteers there every day because otherwise you couldn't get the little kids out and they would be very frustrated.
And it's a big part of our skate club program. The chaperones of the program, their primary job is lacing kids up to skate. It's the, you know, I think there have been a lot of advancements with the skates and the plastic boots and the insulated liners that really create a better opportunity to get out in a hurry. But it is complicated. Even lace-up skates, the kids, because they make them so strong these days, aren't able to sort of tighten them down like mm-hmm. when old Jim and I were kids.
Yeah.
The boots were, you know, akin to tennis shoes with blades,
right.
and anyone could tighten them down. But definitely for younger kids requires some help to get
yeah.
them out there on the rink. In fact, in my role of being connected with the PTAs and the schools and encouraging, you know, the opportunities for skating, I always press on them, you know, the point that you're investing in your facility, you should really consider seeing if you can get them out at lunchtime and utilize mm-hmm. some of their day for the activity. And it really takes a pretty well-motivated school population of parents and PTA volunteers and staff to accommodate that. Some of the schools are able to do it, some don't, but because the limited time for lunch hour, but it's something that the lacing of the skates and the putting on of the skates is definitely...
That's a challenge.
Yeah, it is a challenge. But
For those folks who haven't skated in a while, maybe because you think skates are uncomfortable, there's also these soft skates that are made now, the figure skates that have sort of a sneaker look to them, easy to put on, soft. And for those who want to try skating on rough ice, the Nordic skates, which clip onto your cross-country ski boot, are great. They're not cheap, but my son has a pair and he loves them, and you can skate over almost anything with those. And then you probably skate on speed skates a lot of the time, right, Jim?
Well, no, actually... when I was in Holland and I did the 11 Cities tour, I had connected with some Dutch folks over there and a few Americans. And one of the Americans had these clip-on skates that clipped on to your ski boots. And his ski boots happened to fit me. So that's what I used, and that's what I still use here now. Use your skate ski boots, mm-hmm. and then what we call the clip-on skates, which are available here in town.
AMH carries them.
AMH carries them, yeah. Nordic skates.
And you can rent them there, too. I tried them out just to make sure we were going to like them, and they'll rent them to you.
So. Yes. They've got both those skates, and they've got regular speed skates for rent, too, for people who want to try those.
Okay.
And that's my skate of choice now. I have hockey skates, and I do use those because I still go out and do a little pond hockey every once in a while. But, these clip-on skates are great, and they do go over the rough ice. And they are quite comfortable, and they're actually, the blade is a little bit wider than a conventional speed skate, which really helps the stability.
Do you race in them?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
We just had a duathlon where speed skate and then skate ski. We had that at the Cuddy Family Park. Actually, that was our 8th annual, and the winners all used the clip-on skates.
Okay, yeah, because that would be a ton faster switching over.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. Well, I have another guest I'd like to bring on the air with me now. Tom Morfitt is editor of the newspaper down in Haines and a skater who lives right on the edge of the ice. And he's also sent this gorgeous picture of skating on Lake Chilkoot down there. Thanks for being with us, Tom.
Hey, thanks for having me on. It's Charles, I'm a skate junkie, so I'm glad you're doing the show.
Yeah, it's a great topic. So tell us about skating in Haines. It sounds like there's a lot of options down there.
Well, it's funny. It really just took off here probably in the last 15 years as winter recreation. The town was always kind of like a snow machine and basketball town. And I think it might have been the influx of people from Minnesota and the upper Midwest brought their skates with them. And then we had some weather patterns that were a little different. We usually get dumped on with snow pretty early in the winter, like this past winter. In December, we had 92 inches of snow, which kills, the skating on the lakes. But for a couple of winters there, it was dry through like Christmas in terms of snowfall. And so the lake set up, and sometimes they set up just absolutely Zamboni smooth. And when that happens, people discover them. And then kind of what has spun off since then is the town has started a little rink, an outdoor rink, which we never had before. And, there's guys that have been maintaining that. It's all a volunteer effort out here at the Southeast Alaska State Fairgrounds. So it's been a real interesting evolution that's really only occurred in the last 20 years that skating's kind of taken off here, both in the rink with a local hockey club and on the lakes, and which is usually a kind of a separate thing that older people do. But the great thing about the hockey club is that the kids, people learn when people, even adults, because I took up skating late after I moved here, that having that third leg of the hockey stick, we found is a great way to get kids and adults more comfortable on their skates.
Right.
If you have a hockey stick and you're chasing a puck, you're not thinking so much about your skating, but you're, in fact, learning how to skate all the while.
Uh-huh.
And especially for kids, the idea of just going out and skating for, a 5 or 7-year-old kid may not be so appealing, but you give, like, a little boy a puck to chase on the ice, and, man, he's going to do it.
That's right.
And, it's remarkable. In fact, most of the lake skaters here are still on hockey skates just because it's a good all-around skate, and none of us, or very few of us, are good enough to know what to do in a pair of figure skates. I think most people would trip over those teeth.
Yeah, that's what always happens to me, especially if the ice is rough, that pickle just bring you down. So you sent us this beautiful picture, which we put on our website, of Chilkoot Lake skating. Is this you on this in the mountains?
That's Paul Wheeler. He's kind of the guy, our guy from Minnesota that was kind of our Pied Piper of skating.
So that's a distant skate. It looks like you can skate a heck of a long way.
Yeah, it's 3 miles across the lake and back. So it's a fun skate, it's relatively protected from the wind, which can be a big issue when it gets cold enough to skate. On that lake, I've been out there twice. I remember that just absolutely stick in memory. Once on a full moon Christmas Eve, that bowl of mountains around that lake just is absolutely bright with the moonlight on it. And you don't need a headlight, a headlamp, or anything. It's just beautiful nighttime skating. Mm. And once we were out there for a lunar eclipse, and people went out with those kind of those big barbecue-type things you build a bonfire in. And they were out at different locations on the ice, and it looked like something out of the Tolkien movies, you know, The Hobbit. You know, it kind of had this primal landscape with these fires on the ice, but it's interesting how it's kind of taken off here. And now the hockey club is doing programs, and it's all volunteer driven with kids and doing instruction. And it's pretty interesting to see that it's been almost completely without any government support.
Right, just community, yeah. Well, you know, the ice looks so clear, and you mentioned something to me in an email about fish, seeing fish down there. Have you actually?
Yeah, at Rutsabeck Lake, I sent you another photo of Rutsabeck Lake, which is a smaller lake, and in November, when that one freezes clear, you can actually see the brook trout below the ice and chase them around the lake from above. And so it's, you know, and when ice freezes that clear, particularly where you can see the bottom, it is a wild sensation to skate on it. You know, it messes up your inner ear because you look down and your brain says, I should be down there. You know, you should be falling through. And I don't know if any of the other listeners have experienced that, but on those occasions when you can skate on, you know, almost completely translucent ice, that's another very interesting experience.
Isn't that weird? I've had that experience, and it feels just freaky. Jim, you're nodding your head.
Yeah, I had that experience on Crescent Lake down in the Kenai Peninsula in 1996. We hiked up there in November and went out on the ice, and it was window pane clear, and you felt like you were, and you thought you were only on like an inch of ice, and you were going to just plummet right to the bottom. But then you find a few cracks, and okay, yeah, it's a good foot thick. We're fine here, but yeah, it definitely took some getting used to.
Have you guys seen those weird little? They look like flowers. Those weird little frost things that will grow up out of new ice.
Yep, we saw a lot of those last year in a Klutna Lake when we skated that in early December. And then my friend Bob Batero was up there again this fall. There was a short window when they were able to skate up on Klutna Lake, and they went up one day, and then they went back up a few days later. And the frost flowers were so thick, he said we couldn't skate through them.
Wow. So do you have go ahead, Dom.
Oh yeah, we've seen those here as well, especially on moonlight nights when they're big enough that when they're so big you can sometimes what you see on the surface is just those little florets of crystals, which is neat. One thing I wanted to bring up, I don't know if you guys have discussed, I tuned in mid show, is what to do if you fall through the ice.
Yeah, I know that's an issue. Heather Lindy, who has written about the terror of falling through Lake Chilkoot. So, and we were talking about some of the preparations you need to make. Has that ever happened to you, Tom?
No. We've had four people go through at Chilkoot, and they all escaped, including one guy who fell through, and he was the only person out there. It was early on Sunday morning. And our knowledge of it is that if a person gets themselves in that situation, that what works, and we were watching a video of this on YouTube last year, is to become horizontal, basically swim out, become horizontal with the water or parallel with the surface of the water, and swim up onto the ledge of the ice. If you try to lift yourself like you were doing a push-up or you know, it's the weight, even a very strong man cannot lift himself, a waterlogged person, up out of the water that way. Mm-hmm. And what's more, you're putting a lot of weight right on the edge of the ice, which will sometimes just break that edge. Mm-hmm. But we watched this phenomenal video on YouTube of a guy who, you know, is very fit. And the other thing is...
Yeah, we'll try to get that up on our Facebook at Outdoor Explorer.
Yeah. The other thing is that the worst is not to panic in the first minute or so.
Right.
You burn up a lot of energy. Your body can actually adapt to that for a few minutes, but try not to panic in that first minute. And then get in a swimming position and basically kick yourself like a seal almost on your belly up onto the ice ledge. And it was remarkable to see how effective that was.
Yeah.
We've had people for years that carried, like, you know, forks with them, you
mm-hmm.
know, thinking.
Yeah, we were talking about that, and that sounds.
Yeah.
So we're just about out of time, and I know, Tom, you have some goals that you want to get up in the mountains and do some skating up on Mount Rupinski. That sounds like a great goal. Jim, do you have any goal? You've already done this 10-city tour in Holland. I don't know what else you could have.
I really want to do that one again, but
yeah.
That's, you know. Oh, we every once while we talk about skating Lake Clark. But
oh, my gosh. Yeah. That'd be incredible. Yeah.
And I want to mention, I do have some friends out there who have planes or access to planes. Mm-hmm. So we've heard of them skating Lake George.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. So I think that's the one I'd really like to do.
Uh-huh.
Oh, we've skated Portage Lake too, and you got to be really careful down there on that. I want to caution everyone: this is really fun, and it's definitely an Alaskan experience you can do. But take that safety equipment, and the other thing is, you know, don't go alone.
Yeah, and Edwin, I doesn't sound like maybe you do all this backcountry skating, but you've got some goals in terms of building your program for kids.
Yeah, skating is so much fun, Charles. Mm-hmm. It's funny, I was talking just yesterday with one of my board members of Anchorage Skate Club, and we were talking about hockey, and we were talking about the intensity sometimes and how parents will talk about their kids really like hockey, and we sort of came to the consensus, well, maybe, but they also like just playing with their buddies and getting out and having fun. And maybe they're not in love with hockey, but maybe they love to skate.
Mm-hmm.
And I, you know, I'm enriched with the love of the sport, and I want to grow the opportunities in Anchorage and become a resource where people can go through our website and through our organization and acquire facilities and get to resource things like programs and availability mm-hmm. of ice and link up with, you know, the other people in town who are doing more adventuresome things.
Yep.
For myself, the big adventure for me, and I'm such a city slicker, would be to put aside my hockey skates and try on those speed skates and finally skate that oval full speed.
All right. Well, thanks a lot for being with me, guys. It went by quick because skating is a great topic and it's so much fun, and encourage everybody to get out on any of our ice all over the city or in the other communities we reach and give it a try. Edwin Blair, Anchorage Skate Club, Alpine Services, thanks for being with us. Jim Rankert, Anchorage Skates and Alaska Speed Skating Club. Tim Morfitt from Haines, thanks for being with us, Tom.
Thank you, Charles.
Yeah, and we heard earlier from Land Cole, who is a pond hockey skater up at Denali. Thanks for joining us today on Outdoor Explorer. I'm your host, Charles Wolforth. I'll see you outside.
Outdoor Explorer is a production of KSKA Public Radio in Anchorage, Alaska. Theme music is by Portugal, The Man. Views expressed are those of the participants and do not reflect the station or its underwriters. You can find Outdoor Explorer on Facebook and on iTunes. To see what's coming up on Outdoor Explorer and add your voice to the conversation, go to our website at alaskapublic.org.
Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.